Okay, so now what I want you to do, you guys have been working on it for a little bit. I want you to, if you finished, turn to your friends and see if you're correct. Even if you're not finished, I want you to work with your friends. Maybe even find out their name, you know, get to know each other a little bit. Make sure that you answer all of the parts of the question. Don't be shy. Just kind of insert yourself into a conversation. Watch out for the details of the graphs. See, some of you are slightly incorrect. So, you know, be a little skeptical. If your friend says something, make sure you understand what they're doing.
So, coming from this side, I'd want to go to the one they're coming from. So, right side. Right forward, left side.
Y is going to be
Thing. The other thing is, I'm beginning to see that allowing a class to communicate like this is a good thing, right? So you get to share your experiences with the material and also get to know each other, and maybe they'll translate into working together outside of class if you have maybe a study group or something like that. So on the quizzes, what I'd like to do, and we're going to have like one every week, especially weeks that we don't have exams. It'll usually be on the Thursday. So come in prepared, and I'll let you work on it for a few minutes, and then I'll say, okay, free for all, and just you know, you talk to each other and make sure that you all agree. Now, I'm sure, I've done this with other classes, and I probably will get solutions. You guys are going to hand them in a minute, but some of you will not have the same answers. So, and that's okay. I mean, I'd rather you get the right answer than the wrong answer, but I think having the discussion is a good thing. And so, and then I think this time, probably most of the time, so I'll go ahead and just, you hold on to the paper, I'll work the problem, you make any necessary corrections, and then you hand it in. So what you're getting credit for is going through the exercise, seeing a problem like this, being here on time, which is a big thing, and I think most of the classes here, in fact, let me go ahead and hand out the sign-in sheet. So you're being rewarded for being here and for, you know, working on this problem. Quizzes aren't worth that much, so it's not a big deal if you make a mistake or whatever. If you can't be here one day, I do drop the lowest quiz grade for the semester. So anyway, so I think you all figured out. So you got to factor this. So you get y times 1 minus y times 1 plus y. Now, I know several of you were using a calculator to graph that. You know, that's good, but what happens if you don't have a graphing calculator? Anyway, be thinking about how would you graph this without a graphing calculator? Well, it's cubic, and it has is it a positive or a negative leading coefficient? Negative leading coefficient. So it's going to start high and end low. So it's going to start up here somewhere, and it's going to have three zeros, so negative 1, 0, and 1. And so it's going to start up here, it's going to go through here, and it's going to go through here. And so that's what that graph should look like. And then we remember this is the representation of the derivative. So this is dy dt is equal to f of y. So if the derivative is positive, it's going to increase. Here it decreases. So what kind of point is that? Asymptotically stable. So asymptotically stable. And then it's decreasing here, but increasing here. So what is this point? Unstable. And then increasing here, but decreasing here. What is that? Asymptotically stable. So I'm just going to draw that line over here. So both of these are asymptotically stable, and this is an unstable. And this is called the phase line diagram. And then we do the solution curves, y as a function of t. So our y values are going to be the t-axis and plus 1 and minus 1. And so if you're above 1, it's going to come down and probably asymptotically approach. But here it's going to increase, and yet back here it's going to, let's see, it doesn't want to be at 0. So anything above 0 is going to climb. So you can draw, you don't have to draw a whole lot of curves, you know, just maybe a couple to give the flavor of what's going on. And then below 0, it's going to decrease and then asymptotically approach negative 1. And maybe, you know, a couple of those. And then below negative 1, it's going to increase. So it's going to do that. So that's the way it should look. Now, next week, we're going to see some population models. Like this wouldn't be a good population model because you can't have a population that's negative, right? But we'll talk more about that next time. Any questions on the quiz? Yes.
Can you explain what asymptotically stable and unstable means?
So, you know, if we were just being a little informal, we might just say it's stable because it wants to go here from this side, it wants to go here from this side. Once it gets there, what happens? At this point right here, what is going to happen? What's the solution going to do? It's never going to change again because this, again, this is dy dt. And so the derivative, what we're saying is that when it gets down to this horizontal axis, the derivative is zero, which means it isn't going to change anymore. And now, why do we call it asymptotically stable? Well, because it actually never quite gets there. Because it's going to, you know, as you see, like as it's approaching negative 1, it asymptotically approaches the negative 1, but it doesn't ever touch it. And we can't see that from the equation. We have to solve the equation. You'll see that there's an exponential term in there somewhere. But does that answer the question? Does that make sense?
A little bit.
And then unstable. So if you were right at that point, it would stay there forever, right? If dy dt is zero, then y is not going to change. But if you perturb it, if you move the value of y just a little bit, let's say to the left, then suddenly it's going to start to pick up steam. Why? Because the derivative is negative here, so it's going to want to move away. The dy dt is negative, so y is going to decrease. And here, if you perturb it and go a little bit to the right, it's going to want to increase. So I don't want to do it with my chalk because I'll, you know. But like if you, now I can put my pen and do that. But if you blow on it just a little bit, what's it going to do? It's going to fall over. So this would be really unstable. It's an unstable situation. I mean, it looks like it's stable. But try to do that with a, you know, try to do it like this, right? If you get really lucky, you know, you might be able to get it to stay there for a second or two, but a little gust of wind or something is going to knock it over, right? So this is what we would call an unstable equilibrium, if you could ever even get it there. Yes?
What about semi-stable?
I'm sorry, metastable?
Semi-stable?
Yeah, what I... Metastable, semi-stable. So it doesn't happen in this particular problem, but if you had a situation where, let's say it looked like that, well, it's going to move away that way, but it's going to move toward it if it's coming from the right-hand side, right? And so it's stable from one side, but it's unstable from the other side, so we call that metastable. It's just a term. You know, from my point of view, if you can get the graph right and you get the arrows right, you know, that's 98% of it. What you call it is not that important. As long as you understand that this is an equilibrium point where the derivative is zero, and if it were to happen to get there somehow, it would stay there forever. Yes.
How is it coming in from the right side? Is it not also going away from the right side?
No, because the derivative is negative here.
Okay.
Remember, this is y, but this is f of y, which is the derivative. And so, if the derivative is negative, which means that y is going to decrease. So the arrow is still going to be to the left. Yes?
If you have a decreasing linear function, would that be strictly stable?
You mean like this?
Yeah. Instead of asymptotically stable.
No, because, well, no. Let's say we have dy dt is equal to 1 minus y. Okay, well, that's linear.
You asked the question, right?
Correct.
correct. So that's linear, but if you solve this, you're going to get an exponential for your solution, so it's going to be asymptotic.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with the shape so much of the f of y. It has more to do with what the solution looks like, which, you know, now you have enough tools in your toolkit to, you can solve this. You could also solve this with partial fractions, I think, but, and I'm not sure that would give you an exponential, but I think it does, or that kind of behavior. Any other questions?
So it would be stable?
Which one? This one?
Yeah.
Okay, so what would happen is this would increase and this would decrease. So this would be asymptotically stable. Because they'd be moving toward this point, but it would be moving like asymptotically approaching the value, as opposed to, you know, it's not going to go up there and touch it and then turn that way. That would be, the derivative of this function is not continuous. And I think we could probably show that if you take the second derivative, you're going to get a continuous function. That's, you know, think calculus one here. Other questions? Yes?
Actually, I have a statement that I feel might help a little bit.
Okay, sure.
Correct me if this is wrong, because again, I don't want to provide incorrect information.
Okay.
But the way I understand this, a lot of what we are graphing in this specific scenario is comparable to graphing the derivative of an initial function, i.e., the solution would be x squared, 1 minus x squared, something like that. But the thing we're graphing here would be the derivative of that, i.e., we're graphing the first derivative of the solution.
Yeah, I mean, you saw stuff like this in Calc 1.
Exactly.
This is the derivative. Now, but we got to be a little careful. This is it's a derivative of what, though? If I said dy dt is equal to 1 minus t, now that's the kind of stuff you did in Calculus 1. This is an autonomous function or autonomous equation. You didn't do anything like that in Calculus 1. So it's not quite the same. So
so it's similar, but it's not the same.
You know, people often come to me and say, can I think of it this way? And their wording is vague, and I'm not sure I want to pronounce, you know, yes, you're absolutely right. I want you to know how to do the problem, understand the theory as much as possible. How you describe it to yourself is sort of, you know, up to you. But because with calculus, especially the limits and all of that kind of stuff, it can get complicated. So be careful about overgeneralizing. Other questions? Okay, good. I think this has been a good experience. So we all understand these kinds of diagrams now. If there was any doubt about it last week or whenever, we're hopefully clearing this up. By the way, the quiz will always be over material that we covered last week and then, you know, was in homework for this week. And by the way, if you haven't done so already, the homework cover sheets are up here, and so make sure that before you leave tonight, you turn your homework in. No staples, no paper clips, no ragged edges. Name on the cover sheet where it says name. Looks like you guys have done a great job, so I appreciate that. And also, if you haven't signed the assignment sheet, be sure to do that before you leave. Okay, so I wanted to finish up one thing in 2.2 before we move on. So we talked about 2.2 on Tuesday, but and remember what that was all about. It was, what did we do? Oh, it was the integrating factor. So we now know how to solve the general
first order linear differential equation using integrating factors. We also did one example with variation of parameters, and you saw that there were several, maybe one or two homework problems that asked you to do it by that method. And there was another kind of problem which was also in the homework. If you've started to look at the homework, and by the way, it's always a good idea to get a little ahead, but I know you're probably waiting for the weekend to really do it right. But the let's see, where is it? So let me read the problem. So this is number there's several of these problems, and so I'm just going to do one of them. So 2.2, number 36. So these are problems 34 through 37, and for those problems, the directions say, in each of the problems, 34 through 37, construct a first-order linear differential equation whose solutions have the required behavior as t goes to infinity. Then solve your equation and confirm that the solutions do indeed have the specified property. Now, so normally what you would do is you'd be given a differential equation, and then you'd solve the differential equation to get a solution. Well, this is going backwards and saying, here's a solution. Now we want you to write the corresponding differential equation. And it's more of an exercise. If you understand how to do that, you understand the whole process a little better. So I encourage you to try these problems. They're kind of interesting. I'm going to work one for you so you can see how to do it. Number 34 is actually really easy. It says all it's kind of like one of the problems that we just did. You can write an autonomous differential equation, and you know how to do that, I think. So I'm not going to do 34, I believe 35 and 37 are assigned. But if you can, I'm going to do 36 for you, and if you can do 36, if you see that, then you should be able to do the others. So the solution says find the differential equation having the solution y equals 2t minus 5. And it's supposed to approach that asymptotically as t goes to zero to infinity. So as t goes to infinity. So it's not going to equal this until it gets to infinity. And you might say, well, what does that even mean? Well, if you plot y as a function of t, what does 2t minus 5 look like? Well, you got y-intercept of negative 5 and slope of 2, so up 2 over 1, up 2 over 1, up 2 over 1, you know. So the graph looks something like this, and the solutions, you know, are going to do something. Well, that's not going to happen, but, you know, it's yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen on the right-hand side here. But what we want is for the solutions to asymptotically approach this line. And now, if you've never worked a problem like this, it may not be at all clear how to approach it. But if it was going to satisfy some particular differential equation, what would you probably start out doing? Well, you'd probably want to differentiate the solution and see what you end up with. But this isn't really the solution that we want. Why? What's wrong with this?
Is it an equilibrium point?
It is the equilibrium, if you will, because it's not a point, it's a line, but it's not the solution that we want. We want something that asymptotically approaches it. And so there are literally an infinite number of different ways you can get that, but the easy way to do it is the following. So we're going to use the solution y equals 2t minus 5 plus c e to the negative t. Now, I looked carefully in the textbook. I don't think it actually shows you an example of this problem. So, if you're thinking you're going to find it in the textbook, you might want to just go ahead and copy this down. But now what's going on here? Well, c is some constant. In fact, we can think of it as an arbitrary constant. E to the negative t, if t goes to positive infinity, e to the negative t is going
to
do what?
Go to zero.
So, think of this as an error term. The error between what the curve is really doing and this 2t minus 5, which is our asymptotic solution. So if we can somehow get a differential equation which has this as a solution, then we have accomplished our goal. So we're going to differentiate. So we get dy dt is equal to 2. This goes away. Minus, because of this minus sign here, c e to the negative t. Now, technically that's your differential equation, but I don't have any idea what c is, and this e is kind of out of place. What we can do is the following. So you see this c e to the negative t, I'm going to solve for that in this equation up here. So c e to the negative t is equal to what?
Minus
2t plus 5, okay? Everybody agree? And now we're going to take this and substitute it in here. So we get equals 2 minus that quantity, y minus 2t plus 5. Now we have a differential equation where we've gotten rid of that exponential, and we've gotten rid of the arbitrary constant. And now let's go ahead and simplify. So we get 2 minus y plus 2t minus 5. And I'm going to call this y prime, because that's what this textbook tends to do. And now I'm going to add y to both sides, so you get y prime plus y equals, and then simplify, so you get 2t, and then 2 minus 5 is minus 3. And so that's your differential equation. Now, if you're anything like me, you're going to be skeptical. You're like, nah, that was too easy. Or, how do I know I didn't make a mistake? Yes?
Or, like, what seems to be odd is, like, how do we just add a c e negative c t? Like, how do you just put that into the function?
You mean, why did I put this here?
Yeah, how did you just, like, throw something in there? Like,
well, think about what the problem is asking you to do. It's saying, find a solution, find a differential equation whose solution asymptotically approaches 2t minus 5. Well, what does that mean? Asymptotically approaches 2t minus 5. If the solution, if I could write, I could have an equation, a differential equation, which has this as the solution, 2t minus 5. But that's not what they're asking for. They're not asking for this as the solution. They're asking for asymptotically approaching this, and the way you get that is by, and I said there's an infinite number of ways of doing it. One way is to have a constant times e to the negative t, because as t goes to infinity, this term is going to go to zero, and so then your solution really is 2t minus 5 asymptotically. So that's, think of it as a trick.
If you don't like that, then, you know, C e to the negative 2t. Or, you know, that's where you're wondering, how do you get the infinite number of possible ways of doing it? Well, there's an infinite number of ways you can make a term go to zero as t goes to infinity. You can even have something more complicated here. But I would say keep it simple. Yes?
Would it be correct to say that C e to the negative t is the part that is adding something that makes a difference in the two?
Yeah, it's the error. I call it the error term, but it is the difference. I mean, think of it this way. So if your real solution, y real, is this, so 2t minus 5 plus c e to the negative t, and then your asymptotic solution is 2t minus 5, and if you subtract, then you get the y sub r minus y sub a is equal to c e to the negative t. So this is the difference between the actual solution of this differential equation right here and the 2t minus 5 which I give you in the problem. So, you know, it's the difference between them, or it's the error term, or it's the, you know, what were you saying?
I was saying that offsets it from...
Yes, it offsets. It's the, you know, like when you have, let's say you have a curve that does that. Okay. Well, for some particular value of t, there's going to be an error. And this error is the distance from here to here. And you can see that error gets less and less as t gets bigger and bigger. And that's what we mean by asymptotically approach. Yes?
Since most differential equations are set up as y prime plus y equals something, could we just take the prime or the derivative of y equals 2t minus 5 and then plug that in? So, like, you plug in the derivative plus 2t minus 5 and then whatever that equals is.
Yeah, but this isn't 2t minus 5.
No, I know, but if you take the derivative of y, you get 2. Right?
Yeah, but you're going to get... Okay. So let's say you're saying that the derivative dy dt, or the equation is dy dt is equal to 2. Is that what you want to say?
Well, no. That, so your y prime is 2. So then plug in 2 plus 2t minus 5.
Plug it in where?
Into the general equation of y prime plus y equals something.
Yeah, but you don't know what this is going into this. But you're not given this.
But you know what your y and your y prime is. So 2 plus 2t minus 5.
Okay, but if you do that, do you get the same answer?
Uh-huh. 2t minus 3.
So y prime is 2. And y is 2t minus 5. And you're saying that you're right, that's 2t minus 3.
So then the answer is y prime plus 5.
Okay, but where's the arbitrary constant here? See, what you did is you said, you know what, I don't want it to asymptotically approach it. So you're right. I like your analysis. I hadn't thought of that before, but here's the problem. First of all, your solution, this equation does not have a solution that asymptotically approaches 2t minus 5. And what you've basically done is you've chosen c equals 0 as your arbitrary constant. Also, you're assuming that it's going to be y prime plus y. And that's not always going to be the case. Right? If I choose a different function here, I might get y prime plus 2y or something. So you know, going into the problem, you don't know what your
differential equation is going to be. Other questions? Yes.
So for these problems, you always throw in C, E to the negative T's?
If you're trying to asymptotically approach a solution, I would. That's what I would do. Now, the other, you know, as I said, you should be skeptical. Is this correct?
Can I solve the other one?
We can solve it, right? Mm-hmm. That'll be good review for us. But because it's real easy to make a mistake in here somewhere. Maybe a minus sign error when you're distributing or whatever. Or maybe you forget to add this. And so you should get this answer when you solve this equation. So, so how do we do that?
Plug the equation into y and y prime.
Plug our solution in?
Yeah.
That's one way to do it, but I think the directions actually tell you to solve the equation. If I'm not mistaken, let me see here. It says, then solve your equation and confirm that the solution do indeed have the specified property. Because I want you to know how to solve the equations as well. So how do we do that? Want to solve this equation?
Using an integrating factor.
Integrating factor. So mu is equal to e raised to the integral of 1 dt, which is equal to e to the t, multiplied through your equation by e to the t, so you get e to the t y prime plus e to the t y is equal to e to the t times 2t minus 3. Okay, now this ought to equal the derivative with respect to t of e to the t y, where because it's mu, e to the t, so mu times y. Is this correct? This is, again, this is your one opportunity to verify that you got the integrating factor correct. So, first times the derivative of the second, that's this term. Second times the derivative of the first, that's this term. So, looks good. Okay. So now we take this equals to this. I'm going to multiply both sides by dt and integrate, so you get e to the t y is equal to the integral of e to the t times 2t minus 3 dt. Yes?
So when you multiply the left side by dt, the d over dt, that d just goes away?
No, the d does not go away. I integrated both sides. So it became, there was a d here, and I integrated.
Okay.
That's what makes the d go away. You know, you can't just put an integral symbol by itself over on the right side. You have to integrate both sides. But when you integrate the d e to the t d, times y, the integral d goes away.
So that's basically doing nothing.
What do you mean, doing nothing?
Just integrated that.
I integrated both sides in order to get rid of that d. Here, let me say it again. So, if I have some of this, I want to erase because I need more board space anyway. So, let's do that. Let's do something simple. So, dy dx is equal to 2x. Let's just boil this down to something really simple. And by the way, it's a good question. This is the point of the course where you have to understand this basic stuff. And if you have the question, you probably have some classmates that also have the same question. So, how do you solve this equation for y?
Just move the dx over and integrate both sides.
Okay, so multiply both sides by dx, so you get dy is equal to 2x dx, and then you said integrate both sides. Now, why did you do that? Because your teacher in calculus told you to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, when I teach calculus, I probably do this so much that you forget why you're doing it. But you should always be thinking about why you do what you do. Live consciously. You know, instead of just following rules that somebody else gave you a long time ago and you don't really understand why you're doing those rules. So, the reason you're multiplying both sides by dx is what? Give me one very quick, simple explanation of why you multiply both sides by dx.
So now you can integrate both sides?
Well, you can integrate both sides. Dy, dx equals 2x, integrate.
You can't integrate without the dx.
Right. So you want to get the right answer somehow, okay? Okay, but, I mean, there's something, we talked about this at great length last time, yes?
Stop me if my circuit is wrong, but the dy is representing a change in the function y.
Yes.
And calculus being the basis of this integration, you're studying how a small change in y equates to a change in x, or vice versa, how
right.
a small change in x equates to a change in y. Therefore, your dy isn't actually representing some notational difference. It's showing that you are changing y, or that you are changing x, and therefore, when you integrate, you are undoing that change and trying to find out what it originally was before it changed.
Yeah, I like that. I think you're working too hard, but it's okay. It's good. Think about these things. No, the reason you multiply both sides by dx is to separate variables. Right? That's what section 2.2 is all about. Separating variables. I think. Or is that 2.1? Forget. Yes?
Yes.
Right? Okay, so you put the dx over here, and now you got the y's on the left side, and you got the x's on the right side. Okay. Now, so you got dy equals 2x dx. Why do you integrate both sides? See, other people have the same question. They just did this because their calculus teacher told them to do it. I don't mean to be
like basic algebra, like what you do with one side of the equation and the other.
Well, why not square both sides?
Well, because you're trying to solve for y.
Why not take the reciprocal of both sides? I mean, yeah, who said
you're trying to solve for
solve y? For y? Well, how do you solve? Why does integrating cause you to solve for y?
Because you get
it undoes the differential operator. That's the key idea. So you've got a dy is equal to 2x dx. And by the way, there are a lot of engineers who would be perfectly happy with this expression. You know, what you're saying is absolutely true. This is a change in y, this is a change in x, and this tells you the relationship between the change in x and the change in y. And that might be good enough for the problem that I'm working on. I don't have to integrate. I don't have to get y. I just need to know, if I have a small change in x, what's going to be the resulting change in y? That might be the problem. Now, that isn't the problem that we're confronted with. We're asked to solve for y. Okay, so how do you solve for y? And please be patient with me here. If I say 3x equals 12, how do you solve for x?
Get rid of the multiplying factor.
You want to undo the multiplication by 3. If you want to get x by itself, you have to undo the multiplication by 3, which means you have to take the inverse function. There's a word you haven't heard since pre-calculus. Take the inverse function of multiplication by 3, which is what?
Division by 3.
If I have x plus 2 equals 5, how do you solve for x? Subtract 2 from both sides. Why? Because You've got a function on the left, which is adding 2, and you want to undo that function. You want to undo the addition of 2. So if you have a dy equals something and you want to solve for y, what do you have to do? I wouldn't say get rid of. Undo the differentiation operator or the differential operator. So that you want to undo this differential operator. And how do you do that? What is the only way to undo a differential operator?
Integration.
That's why you integrate. If you ever wondered why do you integrate, the reason you integrate is to undo a differential operator. Always. Always and forever. Amen. That's it. Okay? So, integral dy is y, and now you know y is equal to integral 2x dx, and you know you've had at least 2 or 3 semesters to learn how to do this. But now we know how to solve for y. Okay, we come back over here. This isn't y, it's e to the t times y. But we still want to get it by itself. So how do we do that? Well, we've got this differential operator. How do we get rid of the differential operator? We integrate. You undo the differential operator by integrating. If you integrate the left side, you have to integrate the right side. That's just plain old algebra. So what we end up with is e to the t times y is equal to this integral here. Integral e to the t 2t minus 3 dt. Now, I want to do this very quickly. I want to do it so that you see it once. And so let's distribute so we get integral, and I'll bring the 2 out, so you get 2 t e to the t dt minus 3 integral e to the t dt. Agreed? Now this one's easy. What's the integral of e to the t? It's e to the t. We've got a little bit more of a problem here with the t e to the t, so let's do that quickly.
What is the name of that antiderivative? There's a technique, u times v minus integral of u.
Integration by parts.
That, thank you.
Yes, so you got integral t e to the t dt. U is equal to t, du is equal to dt, dv is equal to e to the t dt, v is equal to e to the t. And then this is uv minus integral v du, so that's integration by parts formula. And so this is equal to, so u times v, so t e to the t, minus the integral of e du, well v is the e to the t, du is dt, so the integral of e to the t dt is e to the t. And then you need your plus c. So you get e to the t times y is equal to 2 times that thing, so 2t e to the t minus 2 e to the t, and then the arbitrary constant I'll add out here to the end, minus 3 e to the t plus c. Now, if we divide through by e to the t, or multiply both sides by e to the negative t, we get y is equal to 2t minus, now these guys are going to cancel, so you're going to get 2, minus 2 minus 3 is minus 5. And then you're going to get plus c e to the negative t. And that's exactly what we're hoping to get, because we solved the differential equation that we created to have exactly that solution. Questions?
about that.
So, none of this is hard. It's knowing how to put the pieces together. Yes? Yes. Or you can come up with a different way of doing it, but you want it to asymptotically approach the solution. You don't want it to just be, you know, 2t minus 5 is the solution.
What about, do we need to see in front, when we're plugging that e to negative t, do we need to see in front of it? Or, like when you first put that in there, like he was asking, do we need the e to negative t?
Well, this is the solution that you really want.
Oh, you want to see because you get to change it up.
Well, you need to have an arbitrary constant, and if this goes to zero, it doesn't matter what c is. So, really, there's a whole family of solutions that will work for different values of c. So, yeah, you do want the c in there. You'll find that it doesn't really add any complication to the problem, but it gives you a lot more freedom.
Is there like a rule of thumb for like realizing like you see like the y prime plus y equals 2t minus 3? Like, why do you decide to add the integrating factor? Like, if it looks simple, why would you like add the...
Well, the reason... Okay, so the problem was to come up with the differential equation, so that we did that. And then the second part of the problem says solve the differential equation to make sure that you got the right... that you get the right answer here. So in other words, reverse the process. So... I don't think there's any shortcut. You know, if this is 2t minus 5, you can't assume that it's going to be 2t. You know, what if this was 2t minus 6? And, or, you know, 2t minus 6 plus this, what does that make this? I don't want to second guess that at all. I'm just going to go and solve the problem, you know. There's a lot more things that are more important to think about in life. Sometimes you just want to solve the problem and move on. Don't look for tricks when you don't need a trick. Just do the technique. Other questions? Okay, so again, there's, I believe, two problems that are in the homework that look like this. Don't be intimidated by the integration by parts, because I think both of those problems are going to require you to do exactly what I did here. If you want, you can memorize this. Integral t e to the t dt is equal to t e to the t minus e to the t. But there's another thing you shouldn't memorize. Just do it. Okay, so now I want to move into 2.3, and so this is, I mean, the whole point of differentiation or differential equations is you've got models of various kinds of systems. And the models tend to have rates of change in them, so they have derivatives. And so those models are going to end up looking like differential equations. And so I want to work a couple of problems. And so you can see how this kind of stuff will work. So suppose that you borrow money from the bank, and let's say you're going to borrow $100,000 to buy a house, and you're going to pay off the $100,000 to the bank over a 15-year period, and you're going to you have some monthly payment. Now, if this were math for business and economics, you know, we'd probably come up with a formula and. In fact, you wouldn't even drive it. We would just use the formula. But you guys are in differential equations, so
we can actually derive the formula that we need ourselves. And we're going to assume that we're compounding continuously, although in a real mortgage situation, they would probably compound monthly. But it's hard to do a differential equation to compound monthly. It's much easier to do it for compounding continuously. So what would the equation look like? Well, let's suppose that the bank just gave you $100,000 and now you're going to pay them back. And let's say you're not even going to pay them back. You're just going to, hold on to that $100,000, maybe you buy the house, but you don't make any payments. What's going to happen to your account? I mean, despite the fact that they'll probably foreclose, but forget about that for a moment.
Your debt's going to increase.
Yeah, the debt is going to increase, yeah. Right? And the way that works is this thing called interest, right? So you have, let's say the amount in the account is A. Or I say in the account, the amount, let's say the amount that you are that you owe the bank. And so DADT, so that's the rate at which that amount is changing. And if you're compounding continuously, it turns out, and I'm not going to spend time on this, but you can, I think it may be discussed in the textbook, you can, or look, think about it, or come to office hours and we can talk about it. But if you have R times A here, that equation describes continuous compounding. So what this is really saying is that the rate at which the account balance increases is proportional to the account balance. If you have more in the account, or more that you owe, let's say, then the rate at, or the amount that you owe is going to increase proportionally to that amount that you owe. And the proportionality constant turns out to be the interest rate, expressed as a decimal, like if it was 5%, it'd be 0.05. And so this is nice. If you solve it, separate variables, you get dA over A is equal to RDT, and integrate both sides, and you get ln A is equal to RT plus C, because R is a constant. And then exponentiate both sides, you get A is equal to E raised to the RT plus C, which is equal to C E to the RT, where I'm taking advantage of the fact that C is an arbitrary constant. So your account balance exponentially increases. And that's what happens with compounding continuously. So, in fact, if you put a P here, some of you may know this from finance or someplace, P E to the RT, a lot of people call that PERT. And that's the formula for continuous compounding. So this differential equation gives rise to PERT. Well, but you... So you're going to borrow this $100,000 from the bank, but you don't want to just accrue interest forever, right? You want to pay it off. So how would you do that? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to have another differential equation, dA/dt is equal to RA, but now we're... So this is the rate at which debt is being added to your balance, but now we need to have a rate at which the debt is being subtracted from your balance. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to call this 12M. 12 is the number of months in a year, and M is your monthly payment. And so you're subtracting debt from your account at the rate of 12M. And what we're going to figure out is what M is. Okay? So, this is your differential equation. Now, M is a constant, R is a constant, A is a constant. Actually, A is the dependent variable, T is the independent variable. So, how do we solve this? Well, separate variables. So, you do dA over RA minus 12M equals dT. Actually, yeah, we can do that. DT. Separate variables. And then integrate both sides. And on the right side, you're going to get t plus c. And this c will actually be the arbitrary constant for both of these integrals. And then, now how do you integrate that? Well, you can do a u sub. But what you're going to end up with is...
1 over r.
Yeah, 1 over r times the ln of ra minus 12m. So you get 1 over r times ln of ra minus 12m, and that's equal to t plus c. Now, convince yourself this is right. Differentiate this ln, and then r comes out, and then r will cancel this r, and you get, and then it's 1 over the RA minus 12M, and that's how we get that. Okay, if you're not sure how that works, then just do a U-sub on this, and you should get the right answer. Now, by the way, don't let me just bulldoze over you guys. If I do an integral, and it's not clear how I did the integral, then just say, I didn't see how you did the integral. And then I'll slow down and I'll do it, you know, I'll show all the steps or whatever. So now, I would go ahead and multiply both sides by r. So you get ln of ra minus 12m is equal to rt plus c. Now, r times c is still c because c is arbitrary. And now exponentiate both sides, base e, so you get ra minus 12m is equal to e to the rt plus c, but e to the c, because this is going to be e to the rt times e to the c, right? Because you're adding in the exponent, you get e to the rt times e to the c, but e to the c we're going to call c, and so this becomes c e to the rt. And now I want to solve for a. I want to get the solution of our differential equation. So I'm going to add 12m to both sides, and I'm going to divide by r. So a is equal to 1 over r times the quantity c e to the rt plus 12m.
What did you mean, Stephen?
E to the R.
Did I miss something?
Yeah.
Oh, this is C. Sorry. Is that right? Okay, good. So now, what's the next step? Yeah, so now we have to... So one thing we didn't talk about in setting this up was the initial condition. And in fact... We really have two conditions here. One of them, the initial condition is what? A of 0 is equal to what? Which is $100,000, let's say. Okay. Now there's another condition. That condition will help us solve for C, but we're still going to be in trouble because we're not going to be able to solve for M without one more condition. What was the condition? Do you remember? Well, R is a constant.
15 years?
Yes. Good, you remembered. I said, so you borrow the money for 50, you pay it off over a 15-year period. So it's a 15-year mortgage. So therefore, A of 15 is equal to what?
Zero.
So this is really the initial condition. This is another condition that will allow us to solve for one of the other constants in the problem, which in this case is m. And so now let's go ahead and impose the initial condition. So 100,000 is equal to, and we didn't decide on an interest rate, but let's go ahead and do that. Let's say r is equal to 0.05. You can get cheaper home mortgages now, but that's just go with something easy. And so 1 over 0.05 times C, which we don't know yet, e to the 0.05 t. Now, t is 0. So actually, e to the 0 is 1. So we get that, right? C plus 12m. And multiply both sides by 0.05. And 100,000 times 0.05 is, 5,000? Is that right? So 5,000 is equal to C plus 12M. So C is equal to 5,000 minus 12M. And now we're going to plug that in here. So we get A is equal to 1 over R is kind of annoying, but I'm going to leave it there. 1 over 0.05 times 5,000 minus 12M plus 12M. Wait, that's not right.
This is
E. Did I forget? Oh, I forgot the... Yeah, thank you. C minus 12M times E to the RT, 0.05T, plus 12M. So that's your function. We don't know what M is yet, but now at least we can play around with things and see, you know, for various values of M. Now, what's the next step? Plug in the second condition. So we get 0 is equal to 1 divided by 0.05. Notice I haven't used the calculator at all yet in this problem. I don't know if that, you've noticed that, but just carrying the numbers along, and, you know, easy arithmetic, I do it in my head, otherwise I just kind of postpone it. So, now was this 12? Should be 12M, right? So this becomes, and we're saying it's 15, so 5,000 minus 12M times E to the, now 0.05 times 15, I'm just going to leave it like that, 0.05 times 15 plus 12M. Now we have an equation involving M alone. So multiply both sides by 0.05, you get just the bracket is equal to 0. And so we do that. So 5,000 minus 12M times E to the 0.05 times 15 plus 12M is equal to 0. Now, if you distribute, you get 5,000 e to the 0.05 15 minus 12m e to the 0.05 15 plus 12m equals 0. If I add 12m times this thing, what did I do here? So you get e to the 0.05, I haven't made a mistake yet, have I? Times the quantity 5,000 minus 12m. Oh wait, I'm trying to solve for 12m. I need to get these together, yeah. Okay, so this is 12m.
So I'm going to add this to both sides, subtract that from both sides. I get 5,000 e to the 0.05. Becomes a little tedious at this point, right? M times 12 times e to the 0.05 times 15 minus 1. And now M is equal to 5,000 e to the 0.05 times 15. By the way, why do I not do this on the calculator, like early on, and just get numbers?
Zeros and decimals.
Yeah, you can have some round-off error. So you do that, if you work for the bank and you do that, they'll fire you. Because they want, you know, they don't want you to make, they don't want you to be a penny off. Damn that penny, you know. They fire people for that kind of stuff. Okay, so divide by 12 e to the 0.05 times 15 minus 1. Okay, so, whew, that's a lot. But when you do that, and I think it's, I worked it out.
Oh, I got a different number. I started with 0.06. So let's do the calculator here.
I figured out that...
You got it?
Well, I figured out the 0.5 times 15 and not the 3.4.
Okay, well, I'm just going to pump the whole thing into the calculator here, if you don't mind. So... $789.69. And those are dollars, so I'm going to label them as such.
That's
your
monthly payment.
That's a monthly payment for principal and interest. Now, it doesn't include taxes and insurance and homeowners association dues and, you know, all that other stuff. But that's what the bank is going to charge you every month for their $100,000 loan, which is, you know, you can't buy a house in Austin for $100,000, but, you know, this is just an example. So, questions on this? I mean, a lot of it was the rigmarole of the, I erased those. No, I guess it's over here. Somewhere. Is that good? Any questions? Okay. The main thing is, you know, the original equation, dA dt, is equal to RA minus 12M. Absolutely understand where that equation comes from.
It would be the us to, like, write an equation like that, because, like, RA is the interest, but then it's still confusing how 12M can be your payment.
Do you see where the 12M comes from?
Not just your monthly payment, but you just...
So, but are you asking, would you need to be able to come up with an equation like this? Yeah.
Like, you can just put M for monthly payments and then multiply by 12 for a year?
Sure. Or if you want, you can put a Y there for yearly payments, and then at the end figure out what the monthly payment is. That would work just as well. Yes?
Even though those are equation for our... continuous interest, it doesn't. How does it change it? Just paying monthly.
Okay, so if you compound monthly, then the account balance will grow a little bit more slowly. For a small interest rate, there's not that much difference. Now, if the interest rate is huge, then yeah, it'll make a difference. But for a small interest
interest rate like 0.05 is not a big deal. That would be a few dollars. And then they would do it on a spreadsheet or on a computer or something like that. But this is a good way to get an approximation to what you're trying to do, you know, for the monthly payment. Other questions on this? So, yeah, I think the idea is sometimes you should be expected to come up with the differential equation and then solve it. And you can see that a lot of it is just algebra, arithmetic, you know, old-fashioned stuff. Yes?
If you were trying to solve for a monthly compounding interest as compared to an annually, would you basically just nix that 12 and just go with RA minus M?
No, because that wouldn't change the fact that the whole approach is continuous compounding. It's an exponential. It's I haven't thought about how you would set up a differential equation to solve that problem. You can use a geometric series to derive the formula if you're compounding monthly.
But that's a discrete equation.
It's a discrete, yeah. You don't, it's not a differential equation in that case. Okay, let's do another one. I think we have time for one more. Now, so far I have not worked a... a tank problem where you have, like, salt or something being pumped into the tank. You guys have probably seen that problem. Is it in the homework? Good. I'm so happy. I want you to see that problem. And by the way, you should not shy away from asking me to do homework problems that are challenging. I hope I can do that, right? So, but come in on Tuesday. If you have trouble doing that tank problem, then come in on Tuesday and ask me, and I'll work the problem for you. I think it's good that you see it. Yes,
it was in this markup on the table right now.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then
everyone,
you guys are experts. Well, my point is, it's an application. Right, and you can solve it by separation of variables, so it's not a hard problem to do, right? Okay, well, yes?
That was kind of a weird question, but how long do you expect for us to take on the homework?
That's a good question. ACC recommends 2 hours of homework for every hour of credit per week. So this is a 4-credit class, so 4 times 2 is 8, so at least 8 hours... a week. Now, that's for ordinary classes like government and history and English and whatnot. Math classes often take more. It depends on, do you want an A or not?
I was just wondering the question.
I know. I mean, I think what's more important is, you know, some people, I don't know how you guys do this, but, like, if you think, well, I'm going to do all my homework on Sunday nights while I'm watching the football game or whatever. Well, that's actually not a good way to learn the material. You probably want to do a little bit every day. You got 7 days in a week, and let's say you do 2 hours a night of homework and studying, reading the book and thinking. You know, get the homework all done and polished, and you think it through, and you're confident with it. That's 14 hours a week. That's not unreasonable for a course like this. Now, if there are going to be people who are going to say, I can't do that, I've got to do it all one time, and I'm going to do it all on Sunday afternoon while I'm watching the kids and while the game's on. And when you get all done doing the homework, guess what's happened? You don't remember a damn thing. And then you come in and take the test, and you fail the test, even though you did all the homework. I see that all the time. So you want to think about long-term memory versus short-term memory. The homework is not just a check that you put in your checkbox. Okay? I think I've said this before. What's more important is that you learn from the homework. So, you know, as you're driving to the grocery store, be thinking about the homework.
think about a problem. You know, in fact, don't even get in the car until you've looked at a problem. You're going to say, okay, I'm going to try to think about how to do that differential equation in my head. And then when you get to the grocery store, and before you get out of the car, you open the textbook and you look at it again. And you, okay. And you spread it out. Do a little bit at a time. And over the course of a week, you'll get pretty good at it. And you won't even know how much time you spend on it. Because it's, you know, before you go to bed at night, you take your book out, and you look at it, and you're like, okay, this is what I'm going to dream about tonight. Sometimes that dreaming stuff is really powerful.
And stressful, yeah.
No. You wake up in the morning, and you're like, oh my God, that was the best night sleep I ever got.
That Dippy Q, man.
I love that Dippy Q. That's right. Okay, let's do one more problem. I think I got time for one more. So this is the escape velocity problem. This one actually is talked about in the textbook. But there's kind of a technique that they use in it that's, that you may not have seen before and probably worth seeing. So So escape velocity, the force of gravity is equal to, I'm going to call it negative k over r plus y, and let me square. And now, you know, here's the Earth. This is your r. So the big r is the radius of the Earth. And then we're going to call this distance y, which is the distance above the surface of the Earth. We're going to assume that the Earth is a sphere. Even though it's not, we're going to assume that the Earth is not rotating, which would cause Coriolis forces and other things to happen. We're not going to worry about any of that. And in this case, K is big G, big M, little m. Right? So K is the gravitational, the universal gravitational constant times the mass of the Earth times the mass of the object, which is up here. This is a little m here. And this is big M. Yes?
Is this a specific problem from the homework?
Is it a problem in the homework?
Mm. Or in the book.
It's in the book. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, I was wondering.
I'm sorry?
I was wondering if I could look for it, but it's cool.
It's in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if this means... See, so... I'm doing you a favor here. I'm going to work this out, and that way it'll take you a little less time to look at it in the book. Okay? So this is the inverse square law that you're probably familiar with from physics. And now, what we need to do is we need to rewrite this in a form that we can work with. So this is equal to... Now, force is what?
Mass
times acceleration. So, M, A, but A is dBdt. So, I'm just going to go ahead and write M dBdt. And I'm going to, let's go ahead and substitute in for K. So, you get negative... G M little m over R plus Y squared. Now that I want to back up just a little bit and do something that will make things a little easier. One is, so if you're at the surface of the Earth, say you're at that point there, what is the force of gravity? What is it?
9.8 meters per second squared.
Yeah, but don't use numbers. M times G. I mean, 9.8 is G, but... Did I say acceleration or did I say force? Force of gravity is mg. So you get force is equal to mg but that's equal to negative g m little m over what?
R
squared. And so the m's cancel. And what do we want to do here? Well, if we multiply both sides by r squared, and I want to solve for gm. I want to get rid of this gm. You don't want to carry around the big G if you can avoid it. So you get g, little g, r squared is equal to negative, and then what? Looking at this. So gm. And so I see a negative gm here. So I'm going to go ahead and replace that with gr squared little m over r plus y squared. I think I want to keep the minus sign though. Let's do this. I'm cheating a little bit. I'm just going to keep the minus sign. Okay. You with me so far? Everybody? So then I'm going to divide both sides by m here. So we get dv dt is equal to negative gr squared, the m cancels, and then over r plus y squared. Now we're getting closer. What's wrong with that equation?
Doesn't have
a
B.
Well, there's a B.
There's no T.
There's a T.
Huh? That whole right side is a constant, isn't it?
No, the right side is not a constant.
Oh.
What on the right side, what is not a constant?
Y
is not a constant. Oh. So what does that mean? It means do we have two independent variables and a dependent variable, or do we have two dependent variables and an independent variable? What's going on?
We have two independent variables.
Can we fix this?
Yes.
We can get rid of T altogether. Okay, so if you have, let's say, V is a function of T, but V is also a function of Y. So if I take dV dt, that's equal to dV dy times dy dt. So what is dy dt? Which is called V, whoever said that. Okay. V, right? So this is equal to V dV dt. This is the trick. So dV dt is equal to V, I'm sorry, not T,
dy.
Thank you. So dV dt is equal to V dV dy. And now we can get rid of this T here. So we get V dV dy is equal to negative gr squared over r plus y squared. And now, you follow that? Everybody okay?
What did you do to get the V dV dy?
I replaced dy dt with V.
Okay.
And I switch the order. Because this is the more common way to write it. You guys with me so far? We're almost done. What's the next step? Separate variables. So you got a VDV, and you got everything over here is just y. So I'm going to multiply both sides by dy, so you get VDV is equal to negative gr squared over r plus y squared dy. And now integrate both sides. And the integral of VDV is b squared over 2. And now, this is, if you let u equal r plus y, then you basically have u to the negative 1, negative 2, but if you integrate that, you're going to get u to the negative 1 times, or divided by negative 1, and so the negatives will cancel, and I know I'm going through that a little fast, but you end up with g r squared over r plus y to the first power instead of to the second power. And now I would maybe multiply by 2 plus c. I need a plus c here. Now, is there an initial condition? Okay, when you launch, so because v is our dependent variable, we're going to say that v of 0 is equal to v naught. And so we put in v naught for, if v is 0, y is 0. So if y is 0, we get v naught squared over 2 is equal to g r squared over r plus c. Now one of these r's cancels, and solve for c, you get c is equal to v naught squared over 2 minus gr, and plug that into your original equation, or your solution, rather. And which is what? This guy here. So b squared over 2 is equal to gr squared over r plus y plus v naught squared over 2 minus gr.
Which one did you plug it into?
Did I make a mistake?
No.
I plugged it into this equation here, which is our solution. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute, I didn't solve for V. Well, it's implicit. This is an implicit representation of our solution. And now, one more thing. I got 30 seconds or something. If Y goes to infinity, what do you want to happen? V is going to be what? If you launch a rocket into, you know, upward, as it enters space and keeps going, assuming that you got the Earth there, if Y just gets bigger and bigger, what do you want eventually to happen? Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to escape the solar system, then you don't want it to be zero. But if you're trying to find the escape velocity, you want to know, okay, at y equal infinity, what is the smallest v naught that we can live with that will get us out of Earth's gravitational field? And so what you do is you set y equal to infinity, which makes this term go away. And what you're left with, and you want v to be zero,
So you get 0 on the left side is equal to V naught squared over 2 minus GR. Add GR to both sides, multiply by 2, you get V naught squared is equal to 2 GR. V naught is equal to square root of 2 GR. And that's the escape velocity from the Earth, where G is the gravitational acceleration at the surface of the Earth. And this is the exact solution that you get in the book. So the trick that you want to kind of concentrate on for this particular problem is this trick, and then it's just separation of variables and you might want to go through it. Okay, so have a good weekend. If you haven't turned in your homework, please do so. Oh, the quizzes. Yeah, please turn in the quiz. Just put it in a pile up here. Make sure your name is on the quiz. Don't worry about it. Is it on one of the pieces of paper?
Yes.
I'll figure it out.
Thank you.
You're welcome.